even to speak, hoping to find somewhere, maybe a tent, wondering where their hopes and dreams all went. There's a demo this evening, as the missiles rain down, I and some others will head into the center of town. Bear witness again to unspeakable crime, and ask the terrible question one more time. Has the bombing begun? Have we failed again to stop the war machine from killing more innocent children? Has the bombing begun? Have we failed again to stop the war machine from killing more innocent children? Has the bombing begun?
That was David Rovick's Has the Bombing Begun? For more protest songs and information, you can visit davidrovics.com.
Thanks for listening to Labor Radio. Up next, Prison Pipeline.
Wednesdays in Portland are a little more festive these days, thanks to Creative Collaborations and Hump Day PDX. Hump Day PDX is a street festival in Southeast Portland, featuring the live music and art exhibits of creative entrepreneurs who are living on the streets. There are also family activities to enjoy, food to eat, and a beer garden for drink, all organized by Creative Collaborations in support of struggling artists and in an effort to stimulate the local neighborhood economy. The next Hump Day PDX is September 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Southeast 9th and Belmont in Portland. More information about this KPU-sponsored event may be found at kpu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host this evening, Carlos Chavez. And with me is my friend and local activist, Jose Gutierrez, who is not going to be in town for much longer, unfortunately. But he took some time out to come in and help me host the show today. And so I'm happy to have him. And I just want to tell you, man, that you're going to be missed when it's time for you to go. So
thank you.
Jose, I met doing some of the programs that we do out in the community. Hip hop that we do with the youth, and then also stuff that I've been doing out in McLaren Youth Corrections. He comes out and, you know, he spits some rhymes. And he's politically sound, so it's we always have a really good time. So we're gonna miss you, man, when you're gone.
Hey.
But
mutually.
So we got a few things on the agenda for tonight, and first of all, Jose is gonna give us an update on what's going on with the Pelican Bay hunger strike. So
yeah. So after 9 weeks on September 5th, 2013, the hunger strike was suspended, in which 30,000 California prisoners participated to demand changes to long-term solitary confinement. Supporters of the hunger strikers say there is much more to be done, and the Short Corridor collective representatives are still proceeding with the class action civil suit against the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. In addition, Senator Lonnie Hancock, chair of the Senate Public Safety Committee, and Assemblymember Tom Amiano, chair of the Assembly Public Safety Committee, have supported hunger strikers. They will actually hold a joint public hearing on the conditions in California's prisons. And the first hearing will take place in October and will focus on two specific key issues. The first one being the conditions of confinement in California's maximum security prisons, mainly the denial of protection from the cruel and unusual punishment. Secondly, the next key issue is the effect of long-term solitary confinement as a prison management strategy and a human rights issue. Senator Hancock so uniquely represented what is in this next key issue by stating that solitary confinement has been recognized internationally and by other states to be an extreme form of punishment that leads to mental illness if used for prolonged periods of time. It's in our best interest to offer hope of rehabilitation while they are incarcerated, not further deterioration. There were a couple of different key reports which I want to touch on. The first report was by the United Nations, which basically states that, you know, solitary confinement is, in even short amounts of time, very detrimental to the human condition and path of very severe trauma. And it can attain, you know, and be equalized as torture. So, again, this is an international organization coming forth and really stating how this is torture. This is something that is inhumane. The next report, which I want to just touch on for a little bit, is a 2006 report by the Commission on Safety and Abuse in America's Prisons. And basically, it states, you know, two different statistics, that from 1995 to 2000, the use of solitary confinement increased by double the amount of inmates who were going into the prison system in the general population. Again, we have realized, and other members in the community who have been organizing in support of these prisoners have noted that this use of solitary confinement is not going to rehabilitate prisoners. The lack of programs while prisoners are locked up is very detrimental. That's what we need. We need some type of assistance, some type of program that will rehabilitate prisoners so that when they come out into the community, you know, they can be successful and lead, you know, lives that are enriched in so many ways and are contributing to our society. So, you know, that's pretty much our update. And lastly, I'd actually like to cite something that is another sense of hope for prisoners who were on this hunger strike for these 9 weeks or 60 days. Lastly, CDCR officials have met with prisoners in person or by phone to listen to them and ask and seek some type of resolution. Mike Stainer, the director of adult institutions, promised to travel to Pelican Bay on the week of September 23rd to discuss with the prisoner representatives their demands and new CDCR policies being developed on gang validation and secure housing unit placement. So, again, this is a very important step. It's a sense of hope. The prisoners feel this sense of hope, and organizers on the outside are very hopeful as well. So,
well, and CDCR had put up a wall up until that point. My understanding is that, you know, it's basically when the two legislators had come out to kind of speak against, you know, the treatment of these prisoners, that the CDCR actually decided to kind of meet with folks and actually at least come to the table and start to negotiate a little bit.
Yes, definitely. You're totally right. You know, up to that point, the governor as well, Jerry Brown, was in total denial of the not only the demands, but again, the facts of about the treatment of prisoners who are on solitary confinement. And, you know, this happened 2 years ago in 2011 when the first hunger strike happened. You know, officials had in faith, you know, presented themselves as wanting to talk to prisoners and sit down at the table. And, you know, again, you know, prisoners are taking this as another show of faith. But again, this will not finish until these hearings have taken place and those demands are very discussed in a way in which they could come to some type of, deal and some type of, consensus around this and create some change. So, again, we are waiting. This is, not over, and we'll see what comes out of this.
Cool. Thanks, Jose. I appreciate that update.
Thank you.
So, on Prison Pipeline, we tend to switch back and forth from local and national and even global topics. We do our best to give some variety on topics such, and perspectives related to those who are incarcerated or who are being affected by incarceration or adjudication in some way, shape, or form. We feature artists, authors, politicians, and even those currently incarcerated, such as the youth that I work with. And on tonight's program, we're going to focus our attention on one of those many topics, this being local activism. So the next guest is a mutual friend of Jose and I named Adam Carpinelli, who you out there in the KBOO audience may even be familiar with. He's a local artist, he is a local artist too. He's a musician, a really good musician, but he's also a really busy activist who does a lot of work around, prison activism. He organizes conferences, grassroots organizing, political gatherings, discussions and workshops. He does a whole variety of different things here locally. And I think he's a really cool person for us to kind of focus our attention on today. So we're going to jump into that interview. I caught him. He was out of town this week, this weekend. So I caught him over the phone. He took out some time to speak with us. So we'll jump to that interview right now. So, all right, let's just go ahead and get started then. So talk about the different organizations that you're involved with here locally and even on a wider scale.
Sure. One of the first kind of in main hats that I wear that I have probably my biggest commitment and devotion to, and I'll explain that in a minute, is the Jericho movement, Jericho Amnesty Movement for Political Prisoner Amnesty. We deal with U.S.-held political prisoners and prisoners of war that are captives of the U.S. state. Many of them are what we call COINTELPRO-era political prisoners. COINTELPRO is a counterintelligence program that started in the 60s under J. Edgar Hoover, which specifically was really aimed at going after black liberation and civil rights activists during that time. But they also went after all different aspects of, revolutionary nationalist struggles, such as Puerto Rican independence. You also have white allies at that time, people, one example would be folks from, like, Weather Underground, people who are, like, white anti-imperialists. And that's an organization that I have the biggest commitment to, mainly because as an activist, we have to understand the important role that people play in really catalyzing and crystallizing social movements around the country, and the actual risks that those people take and the commitments that they make as far as putting themselves on the lines. And a lot of the people that we support are people that come from revolutionary armed struggles as well, and that's why some of them are also considered prisoners of war. So we understand that commitment that they make, and people should understand, too, that it's really a human rights issue, because those struggles, they have human rights qualities to them, because they're people who have and have continue to be colonized in different ways. So other groups that I've been working with for several years now in the Portland area includes Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, which is a great organization that goes back to the 1970s in Portland. Specifically working around revolutionary nationalist struggles in Nicaragua and El Salvador. And that organization has several different committees. So committees that do work around immigrants' rights. There's a committee that specifically works on a really powerful campaign that also comes from a national organization called Enlace, which is about the Wells Fargo investments in the private prison industry specifically investing in corporations like Corrections Corporation of America and GEO Group, and they're running private prisons as well as ICE detention centers. Yeah, other groups, you know, in context of doing prisoner support, but also labor issues, is the Portland Industrial Workers of the World, which is a very historical organization going back to really the late 1800s, not only in the United States, actually, but was an international project and actually was initiated as well by people in Ireland and other places. Industrial Workers of the World is not closed to any particular area of work, so there are different you know, committees for the different work that people do. One committee that's not completely labor-related is what's called the General Defense Committee. General Defense Committee is a group that does prisoner support that is now open, actually, for people who are technically non-members of the union. And so we link up a lot of these different prison projects with the General Defense Committee. And, again, that also goes back, you know, very early on when members of the Industrial Workers of the World, also known as Wobblies, used to get targeted for their very radical union and labor politics.
Yeah, it's good, because I was gonna ask you about a little bit of the history of that. I was wondering, okay, how did the labor unions get involved with, you know, prisoner support? So that's a really good explanation there.
Yeah. So again, I had mentioned the counterintelligence programs that were set up in the '60s under, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, but. If we go back in history, not too much longer before that, early 1900s, J. Edgar Hoover at that time would have just been a kind of a nerdy teenager, just getting into filing, really, for what was then the Bureau of Investigation, which later became the FBI. But some of the major targets in the early 1900s at that time too were, you know, foreign-born radicals, people like Emma Goldman, Pan-Africanists like Marcus Garvey. But definitely going after the labor movements and the Wobblies, the Industrial Workers of the World, were huge targets. And the main reason for that was they were an extreme threat to industrial capitalism and to the actual, you know, factory owners, those people that controlled the means of production at that time. And so this was a major thing.
Most definitely. Even though there's such a wide variety of topics that you're addressing here, you've got, of course, the political angle that I think is very very prominent and very easily recognizable from one organization to the next that you volunteer with or that you're involved in. There's also a nice kind of a wide variety. You talked about, you know, prison. There's a lot of prison-related activism that's going on. There's immigration and there's labor. And like I mentioned, the politics. So you've kind of spread out in a number of different ways, but I think it's easy for people to kind of grasp how each of those things are connected. And I think that's really good because it shows people how activism towards incarceration is such a central activity for people to be involved in and how important that is overall. I mean, it's easy to see how it ties into so many different things.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the activities that you're involved in. I want to
sure.
I want to focus on the letter writing that you do once a month. Like I mentioned before, that this is something that's typically, you know, easily overlooked. You know, it's something that's very important, but
absolutely, but
not as romantic as many of the other forms of activism that people tend to take on. I mean, this is, you're sitting down and you're writing letters to folks that are incarcerated. Talk about, you know, why that's important. Why do you even get involved in something like that?
Absolutely. So the basic idea of writing to political prisoners is connected to this, the larger idea of doing political prisoner support. Okay, so when we're writing to political prisoners, people are always welcome to come and we do it at Red and Black Cafe every last Tuesday of the month. From 7 to 9 p.m. We bring all the materials, you know, pens, paper, envelopes, stamps. We bring different bios, you know, handbills on many, many different people, specifically who are incarcerated for political action, political beliefs. Some of them are even set up, you know, just for thought crimes and things of that nature. And basically, at least my intention when I'm writing to the prisoners, is usually a little bit less of small talk. It usually is getting down to, you know, what do these people need from us? Sometimes it's even as simple as maybe moral support, but sometimes it's financial support, it's medical support. Many of the political prisoners, especially the COINTELPRO era, are people who are the longest-held U.S. political prisoners. They've been held in for, you know, over 40 years. You know, Nelson Mandela in South Africa, for example, was, you know, a notable political prisoner, you know, there, you know, during the apartheid era. So we have many political prisoners like that still languishing in prison. They're getting old. They're getting sick. They have health issues. They need medical attention. It's completely lacking. Because they have activist backgrounds in prison, sometimes they will get even worse treatment and get targeted more while they're inside by, you know, prison guards and what have you. And so we have to figure out how we can get these people out, you know, and use a term from Malcolm X is by any means necessary, you know, and at the least it starts with that communication with those prisoners. And having some dialogue and getting to know these people. And if we can take it a step further and you can actually develop more of a relationship and visit these people at some point, you know, that often, you know, very often does happen when people get more committed to doing this kind of work. But as you mentioned, it's not romantic or sexy work. That's not the point of this stuff at all. It's about doing the right things that need to be done. To some of us, you know, some people have this idea that what those people did, going underground and getting in shootouts with the police, were like really romantic and sexy things that happen, you know, and they're really not, you know. If anything, it's, you know, they took the hardest road to do that work, period. And so we have to support these people. And last thing to mention about this work too, when we do that, is that for people kind of coming into activism sometimes, it's a great way for them to come and learn about, you know, all the different movements, you know, that exist, you know, historically and contemporarily, and the way that all these people and movements have been really under attack, you know, like I said, you know, they were, you know, from the last, you know, couple hundred years, at least in the Americas, you know, with the whole history of colonialism and slavery and genocide. It's a way of learning the connections between this historical legacy, you know, and how that relates to, again, you know, this kind of COINTELPRO era, how it relates today to the Patriot Act, Homeland Security, and all the other weird stuff that U.S. government has been involved with. And part of it is not just the war abroad, you know, on other countries like, you know, this thing that might be happening in Syria, you know, but even the war at home. I think this is another point to make, is that, you know, there is a war at home. There is a war on the people here, you know, and how do we combat that too? So it's almost kind of its own form of, if I can use kind of a heady term, but kind of counterinsurgency, if you will, you know, trying to combat the way that they're trying to really oppress, you know, everybody in kind of, you know, different ways, but obviously, more specifically, people of color, poor people of color, and whatnot.
Yeah, well, Adam, I always love having these conversations with you. The trouble that I have is that it's so difficult to kind of narrow down to one or two things, because so many different things are connected, and I love for us to have these conversations where we kind of bring all that together. And I think people have gotten a good touch of that. The trouble is that our program's only a half hour long, and we can go for quite some time.
Yep.
You know, so that's more the reason to have you on more often. And for you, you know, for folks that aren't aware of this yet, Adam's going to be more involved with Prison Pipeline, and we're very excited about that. So that's one of the reasons that we have him on today. And but one of the things that I really wanted to kind of focus on today is not only just kind of the involvement, you know, the activism that you're involved in, but to point out the local programs and activism that folks that are listening to today can actually get involved in themselves. So I think this is now a good opportunity, Adam, for you to just kind of point out, you know, where can people go to find out more information about these organizations that you're involved in, and either other organizations that you think might be important, so that they can then plug themselves in as well.
Yeah. So again, the organizations I mentioned, there's our Jericho chapter in Portland is called Oregon Jericho. The website is oregon-jericho.org. Okay. Then other organizations that I mentioned too, and I might mention one or two extra ones here, and people can simply, you know, just Google this up and locate the websites for Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, PCASC. And again, there's we have a Portland Anarchist Black Cross as well, which has a really excellent website too, and a lot of really good sources on there. And encourage people to look at that, even if they don't feel affinity necessarily with that kind of political leaning, if you will. We have a group that we've been working around the Pelican Bay Prisoner Hunger and Work Strike in California statewide. And the group that we kind of started around that was called Radical Prisoner Support. And that's actually the name for the Facebook page. It's just Radical Prisoner Support, which is Pelican Bay Hunger Strike just recently stopped. But we do continue that work around different prison issues as well. Lastly, Portland Industrial Workers of the World. You can just look that up, and there's a website there. And we'll be developing some more material soon for the General Defense Committee very, very soon. So we really hope that people think about how they can plug in, even if it's a very minimal commitment, or if they want to put their whole lives into it, that's great too, because we need as much help as we can get, you know. And I really appreciate kind of being, like, you know, featured in this piece here, but want to make it very clear that this really has nothing to do with me at all. It has to do with all the people that have been targeted and imprisoned and murdered, you know, and colonized by the U.S. government historically. And it's about putting focus on that and having people feeling empowered to get involved and to be angry, very angry, and be agitated to really step it up, you know? And like I said, very humbly speaking, we need as much help as we can get, you know? We're not, you know, we're so beyond capacity. And again, this is about building, you know, a whole movement here is really what the whole idea is. It's not about just having a little organization. It's about having a whole movement, a popular movement, you know? Kind of similar in the sense of how people have talked about Occupy in the last, like, year or two. You know, how can we continue to build a popular movement?
Most definitely. Well, Adam, I just want to thank you for sitting down with us today and speaking with me and our listeners. So thanks a lot, man.
Yeah. All right. Great. Cool. Thank you.
Cool.
That was a recent interview with Adam Carpinelli, local activist and organizer for Oregon Jericho. Last on the agenda is the latest segment for Prison Radio by Kevin Cooper, titled "To Protest is a Right."
To protest is a right. Frederick Douglass once said, "It's easier to build strong children than it is to repair broken men." The same can be said for women, as they are included in this oppression that has been going on since the beginning of human beings oppressing each other. Throughout the history of this world, at one time or another, certain people from every generation have had to fight for their equality, their civil rights, and most importantly, their human rights. Without these historical and current-day struggles, it's safe to say that more people will be oppressed than currently are. But if those who are being oppressed, they are tired of it. We are tired of it. All over this planet, poor and oppressed people are standing up and speaking out and fighting back in every way that they can, even non-violently, to gain what was theirs at birth, their human rights. Many have been broken, but many more have not, and won't be, because they understand that this ongoing struggle for their human rights is bigger, much bigger than themselves as individuals, our collective humanity. One thing is for certain, and history is our best teacher in this. If there is no struggle, there will be no change. The fight for one's human rights is not always easy, but it's necessary, especially when it comes to people who have been targeted by the system. To do or say nothing is to suffer in silence while you're treated like a non-human, a stereotype, a piece of trash. In America, we have in this so-called democracy the right to protest for our rights, and it's a right that must be used to change the system. Because not only is protesting a right, it's your constitutional right, which is so very important for all of us to remember. because the oppressors don't seem to follow the Constitution when it comes to us, the oppressed. So no matter where you are or who you are, if you're being repressed, suppressed, regressed, depressed, and outright undressed by the powers that be, it's in your best interest to protest. In struggle and solidarity from death row, I'm Kevin Cooper.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
And you've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. I've been your host for this evening's program, Carlos Chavez, and my guest today has been Jose Gutierrez. I want to wish you the best on your future endeavors. Thanks for being on the show today, man. I appreciate having you.
Thank you. It's an honor, as always. Thank you.
Cool, man. So I also want to thank Danielle, our engineer, for doing such a great job. And for more details, or, you know, if you would like to download this audio or any other, you know, past audio from this program, you can log on to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Have a good evening, folks.